Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
By now, Laker fans are coming to terms with the fact that Kawhi Leonard did not sign with them and instead signed with their rival across town, the LA Clippers. That's left Laker fans, who were so confident about Kawhi joining LeBron and AD, wondering how the hell that could have happened. Try this on for size, Laker fan. Now, from the outset, Kawhi and his uncle, Dennis Robertson, made it very clear they valued secrecy and privacy in their decision. Not that they had to actually tell anybody that. Not that they had to tell anybody anything about that. If you know anything about Kawhi, you know that nobody values their privacy more than this dude. But in the event that any team wanted to sign him had not been paying attention, they want to make that very, very clear. Privacy is extremely important to them because without it, there is no trust. And without the trust, he ain't coming. Either Magic Johnson did not get that memo, or Magic just didn't give a damn. Because while Kawhi and his team valued privacy, Irv valued letting everybody know. Even though he was no longer working for the Lakers, he was still a part of the process, which is why he told the LA Times that he spoke to Kawhi and Uncle Dennis. And he told ESPN a friend called and said that Leonard wanted to meet with him. Hope that was worth it, Irv. Hope making it about you was worth it, because it may have actually cost the Lakers any shot they had at getting Kawhi. Because a person involved in the process told Jovan Buha and Sam Amick that, quote, "I truly believe that when Magic started telling the media about the meeting he had with Kawhi and Dennis, that sealed the fate of the Lakers. I think right there, that was when Dennis and Kawhi decided we can't trust the Lakers as an organization, and that was it. I think that was it for them," end quote. My man Irv strikes again. The guy hasn't been team president in months, and yet somehow, some way, he's still finding ways to bury the franchise he professes to love so much. It's incredible. Now, did Magic telling the media about talking with Kawhi actually cost the Lakers Kawhi? That's not entirely clear. I'm not saying it necessarily did. What I'm saying is it sure as hell didn't help. And everybody knows that. Hell, even Magic has to know that. Nobody knew anything about this process except for one thing, that Kawhi and Uncle Dennis wanted it to be private. Yet there's old Irv running his mouth, telling multiple media outlets about everything. I'm just shocked he didn't periscope the conversation he had with Kawhi. So why would you do that? Why do the one thing that Kawhi told everybody not to do? I mean, was Irv actively trying to sabotage the Lakers' chances of getting Kawhi? Or can he just not help himself? Either or both, and either answer is good. I mean, again, nobody really knows what makes Kawhi tick or why he does what he does. And maybe he never was going to join the Lakers. Maybe he was just stringing them along so they'd wait for him, and by the time he made his decision, there'd be no time to sign any free agents. Maybe he was doing this as part of a plan to jam them and make it better for the Clippers. Maybe. All of that might be true. But it's also 100% true that Magic immediately telling ESPN and the LA Times about his communications with the most private person on the planet was a horrible idea. I mean, by the way, check out the dates on these reports. Here's a tweet from Ramona Shelbourne. Quote, "Johnson says a friend of mine called and says Kawhi wants to meet with you. Johnson told ESPN. I said, no problem. I'm available. If that's what this man wants, but I got a great life. I'm not trying to mess with anybody's job," end quote. Notice the date on that tweet. That tweet was on June 28th. 2 days before the start of free agency, allegedly. Magic already telling secrets out of school. Like the game hasn't even started, supposedly. And Magic is already shooting on the wrong basket and telling everybody about it. What a total look at me moment. But he wasn't done. Brad Turner of the LA Times tweeted on June 30th, quote, "Magic Johnson said he has spoken to Kawhi Leonard and his uncle Dennis Robertson today after being contacted by Leonard's group. Magic said no meeting has been set to meet with Leonard and Magic yet," end quote. My man's a legend. Free agency hadn't even started officially, and he's already given updates on the process to two different media outlets. What, Irv, live blogging, didn't want any of that? This guy's the best, the absolute best. How long do you think he waited between the end of the meeting with Kawhi and Uncle Dennis before he told the LA Times about it? 5 minutes? 5 seconds? I mean, I'm surprised he didn't just conference the media into the call with Kawhi, or do it at the podium from the Lakers facility, or hop on Twitch to broadcast it, maybe do an Instagram story. And he didn't even ask to be referred to as a source or a source close to the matter. He flat out went as Magic Johnson. Like, make sure you get that name right. It's Magic. M-A-G-I-C. Last name, Johnson. J-O-H-N-S-O-N. Magic Johnson was probably wearing a Magic Johnson jersey while he spoke with the media about the one thing that he was not supposed to talk to the media about. Like, the guy quit being an NBA executive so he could tweet to other players. Of course he was going to tell everybody about the meeting with Kawhi and Uncle Dennis. Magic bailed on the organization that he says he loved, and Jeannie Buss, who he says he loves like a sister, so he could tweet congratulations to Russell Westbrook when Russ goes 20, 20, and 20. You think that guy isn't going to tell everybody everything about a private conversation he has with the biggest free agent of the summer? Asking him to keep a secret is like asking him to approach his former job as team president like a full-time job. It's just not happening. And the best part to me is that this is a guy who quit without telling anybody. He didn't tell Jeannie Buss that he was quitting. He told the media that he was quitting. So again, you're going to tell me that the guy was not going to tell the media when he had any sort of conversation with Kawhi's team? Oh, hell no. This guy could not bear the idea of a meeting with Kawhi and company without everybody knowing that he met with Kawhi and company. So, he doesn't talk when you're supposed to talk, but he does talk when you're not supposed to talk, which is awesome. And I couldn't love it any more than I do. Magic Johnson, the player, is one of the greatest to ever do it. He could do everything on the floor and completely destroy whatever plans the opponents had. Magic Johnson, the NBA executive, will do everything off the floor to completely destroy whatever plans his own team has. In other words, Magic Johnson really is the Magic Johnson of horrible executives. We are joined by Bruce Arians. Bruce, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Good, Jim. How you doing, brother?
Good, good, Bruce. Good to hear your voice. Now, the first practice is scheduled for Friday at 4 p.m. So what's this time of year like for you, Bruce? Is it the calm before the storm, or maybe did that storm already start a while back?
Yeah, that storm's been gone for a while. And, we've had quarterback school the last couple of days, and looking at the rookies and watching them and seeing what they retained from OTAs and their quarterbacks, and really, really pleased with it. It's a heck of a class, and just adds the excitement to getting to Friday's practice.
All right, so you spent last year as a broadcaster. How does it feel to be back in it and preparing for a season?
Much more normal. And I can say what I want to say now, the way I want to say it.
Was that a problem when you were broadcasting? You felt like you couldn't say what you wanted to say?
Yeah, the way, you know, I had to bite my lip all the time and kept catching myself. No, you can't say that. And just the first game I did, you know, Ben Roethlisberger threw a pass, and I said, man, he should have hit him. The tight end was wide ass open. And you can't say that. I said, I can't say that. And from the first game on, I had to watch what I was saying.
Well, I understand. Bruce Arians is joining us. All right, so you're coming into a position where the team is coming off back-to-back 5-11 years. You've been very clear, though, this is a group that can win early. As you said, quote, we're going to win. We're going to win now. Don't be afraid of it. Everybody's always riding the fence. Jump in the pool. It's going to be all right. What have you seen from this group that gives you that impression?
Well, I love their work ethic. And, when you study that those two 5-11 seasons, how many of those were close losses, that we just play smarter, make a field goal, don't get a penalty, whatever, you win the game. So just making it a smarter team, it's a heck of a tough division with great quarterbacks in it. But that makes it fun.
While I have your attention, let me ask you something. Is there something that's interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? If so, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp, offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, grief, self-esteem, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything you share is confidential, and it's so convenient. You can get help at your own time and at your own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. If you're not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time at no additional charge. And best of all, it really is an affordable option. And if you're listening to this podcast, you can get 10% off your first month by using the discount code ROAM. So why not get started right now? Go to betterhelp.com/ROAM, simply fill out a questionnaire, and you'll get matched up with a counselor that you will love. betterhelp.com/ROAM. Once again, betterhelp.com/ROAM. Tampa Bay head coach Bruce Arians joining us once again. Now, when you arrived in Arizona, they were coming off three straight seasons without making the postseason. Like, every job's different, but how does this job compare to that one? Do you see any similarities?
Well, yeah, there are, but the biggest one, you know, we stepped in Arizona, we didn't have a quarterback on our roster. Steve Keim did a great job. We signed Drew Stanton, and then we traded for Carson Palmer. Here we got a young guy that I really like. I liked him in high school. I like him in college. And his work ethic is outstanding. So that's probably the biggest difference, having a quarterback in place. We were able to get Blaine Gabbert, who was with us in Arizona, who I like, and he did a great job for us in Arizona. So, that's probably the most exciting part.
I was going to say, I could tell you're really excited about Jameis Winston. Look, there's no denying his potential. What does his ceiling look like to you, and how do you go about getting the best out of him?
Put a better team around him. You know, run the ball better. Play better defense. Don't play from behind where he's got to throw it 50 times and put the onus on him to win the game. And make kicks. You know, that's been a boogaboo around here for a while. Just put a better football team around him so that he can play quarterback. He doesn't have to be Superman.
Yeah, but there's so much talk always about the relationship you've had with your quarterbacks wherever you've been. So far, how would you describe the relationship you have with Jameis Winston? What's that dynamic been like?
You know, it's really an odd story, but when he was in, 14 or 15, we had a football camp in Birmingham 10 years ago, and he came to it. And I showed him and let him put on a Super Bowl ring, not knowing what it meant to him. And he was one of those kids that it really influenced. And then I followed his career because he was one of our campers. And it's very odd that now we're together and really, really excited about it.
We're talking to Bruce Arians. He is the head coach of the Tampa Bay Bucks. You know, another element about you as a coach keeps coming up in the mantra, no risk it, no biscuit. Drew Stanton's talked about that. You know, he says it's not just about being willing to take deep shots. It's also about being fearless, you know, the way you carry yourself. How do you go about translating your way and your confidence into your guys?
I think just being around them and as they get to know you, and every day when you're speaking to them about how our approach is going to be, and what it's going to be, how we're going to play the game, how we're going to call the game. I think they love it and they jump in. You know, that's what they want. They want somebody that believes in them and has got their back. So I think to me, that's the easy part.
Yeah, Bruce, you talk about approach. You've also told the story. You were talking to Jenna Lane, in fact, recently about when you first got in, you were around a coach and worked for a guy who was negative. Like, what kind of an impact did that have on you, and how did that affect you going forward and your approach?
Yeah, I mean, one of my college coaches was always a very critical guy, and it wasn't coaching. Then I got around a very positive coach, and it was night and day. You know, the same players all of a sudden expected to win. And so, yeah, I think I learned a lot. I wasn't a very good player in college, but I got to play the other team's offense a lot and saw a lot of different coaches. Very fortunate to be around Dan Henning, who I thought was one of the better ones. Jimmy Sharp, outstanding. He was my last head coach in college. He kind of patterned one of the Bear Bryant guys. And, it's just, to me, positive attitude controls so much.
You know, Bruce, culture is a word that comes up literally in every single conversation I have now with coaches and front office personnel. It comes up so often. I think people hear it and they kind of tune out, but there's no getting around it. It's so important. I mean, it's literally everything. How would you describe the culture you want in your team?
Accountability. I mean, it's just simple. Be accountable to each other. All your decisions that you make have to be geared towards winning and winning a championship. So if you're accountable And, you know, we have a sheet we put up every day, every morning, every mental error, every penalty, where Bucks are beating Bucks. And we need to have that thing way down. And I think they got it now. You're just holding them accountable in front of each other. So they hold each other accountable.
You know, in terms of mentality and approach and sensibility, you want your guys to be aggressive. You want them to be fearless and play without that fear, especially on the defense and especially in that secondary. How important is it then that the defense lets that personality come out and be who they are?
Oh, yeah. That to me, that's major, major. You know, and Todd Bowles does a great job of putting his personality into that defense. And, you know, we love to pressure. We love to attack people. So that no risk it, no biscuit stuff, that goes to defense too. It's just how we live.
Hey, Bruce, where did that come from? No risk it, no biscuit. When did you first hear that? Or did you come up with that?
I heard it way, way back, and it stuck a nerve with me. That same way I play golf. I hit a lot of balls in the water trying to hit great shots, but you ain't going to hit a great shot if you don't try. I still don't lay up, and I know I can't get there.
Let me finally ask you this. There's been a lot of buzz also about wideout Chris Godwin. Each season he's in the league, he's made some nice strides. How excited are you about his versatility, and how do you see him fitting in that offense now that you're there?
Oh, man, he should fit perfectly in what we're doing, because he's a physical guy, he's a big guy. We can use him in the slot, we can use him out wide, so he'll never come off the field. And he's going to get a lot of single coverage, because they're not going to let Mike Evans be over there one-on-one for sure.
Hey, Bruce, now that I've got you back in here, now that you can say whatever you want, is there anything else that you've had that you want to get off your chest that you couldn't say before that you need to say right now?
No, I'm pretty good now, brother.
All right, here's the head coach. He was named head coach in January, a two-time coach of the year, head coach of the Bucks. Bruce, great to have you back, and it's always good to have you on the show. Thanks so much for doing it.
I think you're wrong. You bet, bro.
Dave Roberts is my guest. Dave, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Romy, good to be back as always. I'm doing well.
Good to have you back, Dave. Thanks so much. Coming off a tough loss last night to the Angels, 5-4, Cody Bellinger. Dave was thrown out at the plate to end that game. Let me start right there. When you have an ending like that, does it sting a little bit more, or are you able to shake that off pretty quickly and get right back at it?
I'll tell you right now, Romy, is you know what's funny is that you never like to lose any games, and they all sting. But I might argue that that's probably the easiest loss I've been a part of. And I say that because we got beat, and it's not the first time our club has gotten beat. But I think that if you look at how we competed for 27 outs, and you look what it took for that Angel team to beat us, you know, Trout makes an unbelievable throw on a dime from center field. Pujols makes a great play to take down a run earlier in the sixth inning. And then you got that Calhoun play with a speedy Bellinger. So it took that to beat our club. And even that last at-bat by Kike against the closer was a great at-bat. So tough loss, but I'll take it, I guess.
Yeah, I would imagine, Dave. Also, if you're going to lose like that, if you're going to lose playing aggressive like that, you'll probably take that. Dave Roberts joining us. You know, I want to go back to a sequence of games last week. You had the 12-inning game in Boston where your guys refused to give up on any at-bat. They kept grinding until they got that win. Then you get to Philadelphia practically as the sun is coming up. Normally, a team is going to mail in the game after that, but not your guys. They show up at the park. They beat the Phillies 16-2. What do those two games demonstrate to you about the physical and mental toughness of your group?
I think character. And I think that if you look at our 25 guys, regardless of circumstance, situation, how we're playing, who we're playing, Romy, I think that, you know, our formula basically over the last 4 years is, you know, winning by talent, depth, and attrition. And I think we just grind teams down. And you can look at August and September where people talk about dog days, but you never hear that in our clubhouse, because our guys just stay fresh. And we're just kind of part of our DNA now is we just grind you.
Dave, how do you explain that? I mean, when you've got a massive lead in the division and you're coming off a long game in Boston and some brutal travel, yeah, I mean, guys are going to tell themselves, we can coast through that game. We'll come back the next day. I mean, how do you explain the fact that your guys don't do that, that they never give in?
Well, you know what? I think that it's just understanding that everything we do has a purpose. The details, just appreciating that spring training games matter. And you don't dial it up or turn it up a notch in the postseason. And I can tell you a quick story. It's probably the maddest I've been in our guys, Romy, is my first year in spring training. We had a speaker come in and talk about rules or whatever it was, and we had guys kind of losing focus. And it was a 30-minute meeting, and I just felt that we disrespected our guest. And the challenge for the guys is, you know, we're expected to play 162 games and win 11 games in the postseason and play 3-4 hour games. And if we can't stay focused for 30 minutes when somebody comes into our clubhouse to give us information, then there's no chance we have a chance of winning a championship. So that really is something I think lands with a lot of our guys, and our guys have really taken it to another level.
I appreciate you sharing that story. That's a really interesting story. Dave Roberts joining us. And then you have Cody Bellinger. He goes 4-for-6 in that game that we're talking about, a couple of home runs. I mean, I could pick any number of Bellinger moments to talk with you about, but as you look at what he's doing this season, Dave, what kind of thoughts do you have? How many players have you ever seen put up a season like the one he's putting up right now?
I haven't seen it in person. I think that the only person I can sort of relate to is Barry Bonds, and I played against him when he was so special. But even at that point in time, Romy, he wasn't doing what Cody's doing on the bases defensively. And even in that game you're talking about, Romy, I mean, this is like a guy MVP running out an infield single, beating that out, and almost getting to a play down the right field line when we're up 14 runs and selling out. So that's what we're getting from him, and backing up bases and going through approach versus plan and mechanics and all this stuff and being a great teammate. So I really haven't seen it, and obviously we've seen one of the greatest of our generation in Mike Trout, but I haven't seen it up close on a consistent basis.
Dodgers manager Dave Roberts joining us. You mentioned Barry Bonds. Dave, obviously he wasn't doing defensively or on the base pass what Cody's doing right now, to your point. But when Bonds was dialed in, when you used to go up against him and he was dialed in offensively and he knew that he was only going to get one pitch, if that, and still managed to turn on it nearly every single time, what was it like to pitch to him and go up against him back in the day?
There was no one better. And I remember being in many scouting meetings. I was with the Dodgers at the time saying, don't let this guy beat you. Pitch to the corners. Don't give in. And I'm standing out in center field, and then you see that 2-0. Leak back to the middle of the plate, and it's kind of when guys try to be too fine or spin that breaker too much, then it ends up hanging. And gosh, I've retrieved or tried to retrieve many balls into the bleachers off the bat of that guy. He was something that I don't know if we'll ever see again.
We're talking to Dave Roberts. Dave, you talked to Tom Verducci recently about the team's defense and the fact that your defense is elite. What makes this team so good defensively?
I think they care. Romy, it's just every pitch, knowing the pitch, buying into where you're supposed to be in a certain time, a hitter, the spray charts that we have. Our guys think that and understand everything is important. And when you really care about every single pitch, being in the right spot, getting good jumps on the ball, throwing to the right bases, that's it. I mean, that's the win. Our guys just basically, you know, care.
Dave, how rare is that to value every single pitch, much less every single at bat? I can remember a star player once telling me, anybody who tells you that they don't give away at bats is lying. Everybody does. How do you get guys to care about every single pitch, much less every single at bat?
Well, I think it's just one of those things where you just get it down to the micro, and you got to train yourself, because you can see it, guys get fatigued, their minds get fatigued as the game goes on, as the season goes on. But to really try to win pitches and understand, and you said it, guys might not say they give away at bats, but you're afraid to get beat in and you get beat by a breaking ball away, that's giving away an at bat. You know, not just an out on the first pitch or not knowing what pitch is coming and being ready to break on a slider when you're playing shortstop or second base or who's covering and switching up coverages. Those things really matter. And I think it's just something that, going back to Chris Woodward, who's now in Texas, really ingrained in our infielders. And when you have Justin Turner, Corey Seager, Kike Hernandez, Max Muncy, those are special players.
We're talking to Dave Roberts. Now, you've had a lot of success as a team. Pat Riley, for one, used to talk about it in the past, the disease of more, and how success makes it tougher for guys to sacrifice for the team. Yet it seems like you've been able to get guys to continue to do that. How do you avoid the disease of more? Like, I know we're talking about similar things, but what about the disease of more? How do you prevent that?
Well, I think that it's just trying to be a servant and trying to get our guys to be great teammates. And when we speak a lot, and mostly, Romy, we talk about the little things and things that we've touched on already. I think that the slug, the strikeouts, the wins individually for a pitcher, all that stuff comes natural for a player. But when you're talking about picking guys, backing up bases, base running, buying into a team offensive approach, taking a walk when they're giving it to you, running the bases the right way, going first and third, those things I think that we really push hard on, and that kind of allows for the more, because the more a lot of times becomes individual based, And that's natural, and that's going to happen.
Dodgers have the best record in baseball right now. Their manager, Dave Roberts, joins me for a couple more moments. Yesterday, the team announced, Dave, plans for a renovation of Dodger Stadium. Now, when you're talking about major or any kind of renovation to any venue, it's serious. But when you're talking about renovations to Dodger Stadium, one of the most famous venues in any sport, how careful is that process, and how excited are you for the plans?
I'll tell you, starting with Mark Walter, Stan Kasten, and Janet Marie, who is kind of overseeing the renovation, they're going to nail it. And Janet Marie did the renovation with the Red Sox and Camden Yards. And so she is just a genius. And you're exactly right. This is an iconic venue. And to get it right, to maintain what we know as Dodger Stadium has got to be the most important thing. But now you're layering in, you know, the fan experience and going forward and looking out 20, 30, 40 years and making it more fan-friendly, the concourse, to be able to walk Dodger Stadium all the way around, the escalators, elevators, to have social settings and craft beer stations, it's going to be a special place. And to host the All-Star Game next year, to be able to showcase our great city, it's going to be a lot of fun for everyone.
That's amazing. Now, part of the renovation also is the addition of a statue of Sandy Koufax. Now, you and I have talked in the past, right? And I can even see your response already. We've talked in the past about the tradition of the Dodgers. I know the reverence and the love you have for it. When you get a chance to think about the history of the team and guys like Sandy, do you still get goosebumps?
I get goosebumps every time I hear that name, or let alone when I have him come into my office and share a glass of red wine with him. And this guy, as you well know, Romy, is so humble, wants to be in the shadow, in the background. And there's no background when you've got a statue, a well-deserved statue coming of yourself in front of Dodger Stadium next to Jackie Robinson. And there's no two better people that represent our great organization. So I can't wait to be there for that unveiling.
Dave, what's that like? I mean, you've been with the best, you've played with the best, you've gone up against the best, you've managed some of the best, but there's nobody like Sandy and that kind of it. Like, what's it like to have a glass of red wine in your office with Sandy? And what do you guys talk about?
It's like it's royalty. And I say that, and I mean it in the best possible way. And I know Sandy would hate me for even saying that. But it's like I've never met a president of the United States, but it's like you just feel like you're around royalty and you have to act in a certain way when you're around Sandy Koufax, because there's just – he's a good-looking, he's just hasn't aged at all, and just what he's done, there's just this aura about him. And like I said, we've all been around great celebrity people that are iconic, but Sandy Koufax, there's just kind of this untouchable – type feeling that you get with Sandy, and there's this aura which I just love and I eat up and I get nervous every time I'm around him.
And I would imagine even talking about him right now, Dave, like I get this. I have not spent a lot of time with him. I saw him on a golf course once. Sandy's got that impossible it that you don't know how to describe it, but you know it when you see it. And it's not a Dodger thing either, right? The man just exudes unbelievable class.
You know what? You said it. It's class. That's right.
Dave Roberts, my guest. Dave, one last thought. You've got the trade deadline coming up. I just want to ask you about that really quickly. I know you're focused on your job and getting a win tonight, but what's the next week like for you as a manager and for your guys?
I think it's just keeping us focused, Romy, on just winning baseball games, because I think that, you know, you're always trying to get better. I think that we're all trying to get better, and we can see, and every general manager is trying to do that. But the thing is, though, is that for every addition that you have, you're going to lose somebody. And I think that a lot of times players in the clubhouse, you know, you don't understand that. And you really got to get it right, because there's a lot that goes into team chemistry on the field, off the field, what makes your club better. But obviously the narrative has been bullpen. So I talked to Andrew this morning, and you know, he's grinding, and he's going to do anything he can to make our club better.
The Dodgers have the best record in baseball. They get at it again tonight against the Angels, which is always a blast. Dave Roberts, my guest. Dave, you are the absolute best. It is so great to have you back. Thank you very much for doing it.
All right, Romy, we'll see you soon. Get out to the ballpark.
Prepare for your summer road trips. Before you head out, visit O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simple preventative maintenance before you hit the road will ensure a safe journey during the summer months ahead. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Josh Donaldson is my guest. Josh, good to have you back. How are you?
Good, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Josh, it's been a minute since you and I have spoken, so let's catch up for a moment. How is life, and how are you enjoying things with the Atlanta Braves?
Yeah, it's great. It's a great team to be a part of. Lots of exciting players on our team to watch and to follow. And, you know, it's been one of those things to where for me to be able to get back home or near home And playing in front of a lot of family, friends, day in and day out has been pretty exciting for me as well.
You know, I was going to say, going to Atlanta meant that you get to go back south and be closer to home. It's not for everybody, Josh, as you know. In fact, it can be a burden for some guys. You touched on it. What's it been like for you?
Yeah, you know, I've kind of felt that way for my career. I was kind of happy to be on the West Coast and then in the North to start my career just because it can be tough at times. But, you know, I signed very early this offseason, and I was able to kind of get ahead of, you know, just the issues that may cause and to have people that are my support system that help me to take care of that on a daily basis. And, you know, so far it's been going really well, and our team's been very successful. And, you know, it makes it very easy to come to the park every day and look forward to going out there and playing and winning games.
We're talking to Braves third baseman Josh Donaldson. You know, to that point that you signed early in the offseason, obviously you had done your research and you took a look at what you could bring to the team defensively, offensively, the lineup, et cetera. What was it that you saw in Atlanta that excited you the most that made you feel like that was such a good opportunity?
Well, I mean, I think first is, you know, you had a guy like Freddie Freeman who is a staple in that lineup who's been, you know, probably one of the top 10 to 15 hitters in baseball. And then, you know, you look at the young core around of the Acuña, the Albies, the Dansby Swanson, you know, just how much the pitching, the young guys in our pitching staff that could really do a great job at some point. And then, you know, they were still maturing, but I felt like there was a great opportunity for all of us. And then I knew the dynamic that I brought to the team and that could help out and continue to develop this team to become better and to win a lot of games as we have so far this year. And I just felt like it was a perfect fit, you know, having Alex and then having a lot of my former training staff that was with me in Toronto just really made it that much easier for me to pull the to make the decision.
Josh Donaldson is joining us. You know, you go back to that young talent that you spoke of. It's a team that's absolutely loaded, and you've got a bunch of talent that's really young. So, Josh, when you see guys like Ronald Acuña Jr. and Ozzie Albies and the others and what they're doing at such a young age, what do you think?
I mean, it's pretty incredible. You know, to look back where I was at when I was 20, 21, 22 years old, and to see how far they are, I think there's a lot of reasons why that is. And, you know, I think one of it is the availability of being able to watch swings and to be able to watch guys perform more often than when I was a kid growing up. You know, all we had, the social media platform really wasn't there. And to be able to see guys swings in slow motion, to be able to try to replicate that, I think has helped tremendously. I mean, you just see a lot of young guys in the league now that, you know, I feel like are ahead of where a lot of younger guys were at when, you know, I was coming up and even before that. And it's pretty remarkable. And the biggest thing that I'm probably jealous of about all of it is how fast they can run and how fast those legs move on a daily basis.
It's funny, you know, especially that part about hitting, though. That's that's the Josh Donaldson I know. You and I've always enjoyed talking to you about your approach to hitting. So, I mean, obviously they've got some tools that maybe you didn't have coming up, but how much of hitting is an art form and how much of it is a science?
I think the art is the science, right? I think that everybody has their own way of going about it and way of approaching it. But there is scientific numbers that are backing this up now and backing up what you do well and what you maybe you don't do as well. You know, there's hard data to be able to look at. And for me, like this year, when I got off to a little bit of a slow start at the beginning of the year, and to be able to have confidence in yourself becomes a little bit easier at times because I can go look at, you know, exit velocities, the trajectory of the ball coming off the bat, seeing all this stuff, and know that I'm still doing well. I'm hitting the ball hard. It's just not, I'm not getting the luck factor in there at the moment. And I know that that's going to change at some point. And so it's good to kind of have that, but not to just be all consumed with it. I'm not about that either.
We will get into all that right now with Dana White. Good to have you back. Dana, how are you?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Good, good. So, Dana, before we get into UFC 240 and fight night after that, I've got to go back and ask you about UFC 239. There have been some amazing nights in UFC history over the years, but where does UFC 239, which included the Masvidal knockout, the Nunes knockout, and the Jones-Santos battle, where would you rank that night?
It was a great night. I mean, I've been saying it. Fans have been saying it to me. Media has been saying it to me. Everybody's been saying it to me. We've been on an unbelievable roll with amazing fights. And, you know, that night was hyped up as one of the biggest fights of the year, and it delivered.
You know, Danny, you've been around combat sports for a long, long time. Obviously, you've seen every kind of knockout. Have you ever seen a knockout like the one that Masvidal put on Askren?
It was brilliant. You know, if you think about when he was preparing for that fight with Ben Askren, he knew he was going to shoot on him. So the way that he set up that knee, the way he landed the knee, I mean, everything about it was perfect, brilliant. And one of the coolest things you'll ever see in sports.
We're talking to Dana White. Now, Masvidal, Dana, was amazing in the cage. He's been a star with the media. Do you think that he got into Askren's head before the fight?
I don't know. You know, if Askren, he's the guy that likes to talk a lot and likes to try to get into the head. I don't know if he did or not. I think that he just predicted exactly what Ben Askren was going to do, timed it, worked on it, and executed it perfectly.
All right, so where does that leave Masvidal, and what does the future look like for him?
Well, Masvidal is one of the top three guys in the world right now. You got Usman, who's the champion, Woodley's number one, Colby Covington's number two, and Masvidal's number three. So it put him in a great position. His popularity's never been higher. That highlight reel will be watched forever. And let's see what he can do in the next year.
UFC President Dana White joining us once again. All right, so when you look at what Amanda Nunes has done to everybody she's faced in the last 4+ years and the way she's done it, is there any doubt in your mind that she is an absolute bona fide star now?
Absolutely a star. One of the best to ever do it and the greatest female fighter ever.
What makes her so great? How is she so unique and so different? What sets her apart?
Well, when you think about, you know, the women's fighting become very popular. People love women, but women don't usually knock women out cold. And Amanda Nunes does that. And she doesn't just do it to, you know, this girl isn't fighting bumps. This girl's fighting the absolute best female fighters on earth and knocking them out.
You know, obviously, Dana, you know, you go back, and it was not something that you had a lot of interest in early on, but then you brought women into the sport. How important has that been for your business?
It's been incredible. It's one of the smartest things I've ever done. And, you know, the popularity of women's fighting just continues to grow.
We're talking about Dana White. Now, Dana, we get to the John Jones portion of the interview. How about that report earlier this week that he's facing a battery charge from an incident in a strip club back in April? What was your reaction when you heard that?
I'm kind of numb to it these days, you know. I'm kind of numb to it. John, believe it or not, Jim, you got me speechless here. I actually don't even know what to say about it. It's just like it's almost to be expected.
Are you numb to it? I mean, were you pissed? Were you like, oh, great, you throw your hands up? Or
yeah,
were you
just,
waiting?
I'm,
were you Dana? Or were you waiting for the Magic Man song to come in when I asked you that? Remember this? Fantastic,
yeah,
man.
I'm over being pissed. You know, every time John Jones fights, I think it might be his last fight because I just never know what's going to happen with John. You know, and then there's two sides to every story. The truth lays somewhere in the middle, and they both have a side of the story in this thing. And I don't know. We'll see how this thing plays out with him.
I was going to say, we'll see how it plays out. One last thought about him. How does he look to you right now as a fighter?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, look at the stuff that we're talking about every time we're on the phone, you and I, that we're talking about with John Jones. The things this guy's done, you know, the life he lives outside the octagon. The fact that this guy is able to come back and still, you know, this kid that he just fought, Thiago Santos, is an animal. You know, this kid is hungry. He's young. He's talented. He's well-rounded. And he wants what John Jones has. And John Jones stopped him from taking it. I mean, it really is unbelievable how talented John Jones is. And I say it all the time, and I'll probably be saying it for the rest of my life. It's sad to see what this guy could have accomplished. I think that John Jones could have been, you know, a Jordan-esque type figure for the sport.
Could have been, should have been. And when you mentioned Jordan, it makes me think of Uriah Faber. Before we talk about the card this weekend, quick thought about Uriah Faber. What did you make of the way he showed up at UFC Fight Night and dominated the way he did?
Incredible. So happy for the guy. And, you know, he did it against a real guy. We didn't, he's in his hometown, co-main event, coming back from retirement, and we give him a layup. We gave that kid a killer. And he knocked him out in the first round, looked unbelievable. And, you know, leading up to that fight, there was some negotiating going on with he and I. And I kept telling him, you're old. Listen, you're old. You retired for a reason, Uriah. You know you're old. I know you're old. You know, if you want to do this fight, let's do the fight. We'll do it to you. We respect you. You've been around forever. You're one of the all-time greats. You're a Hall of Famer. And he came out and proved me wrong. He looked great.
Never underestimate the pride of a champ. That's a great story. Dana White joining us. All right, so you're going to roll it right back, Dana, with Max Holloway and Frankie Edgar this Saturday night in Edmonton. It's a fight that nearly happened a couple of years back. How excited are you to see this live Saturday night?
Very excited. I leave tomorrow. Can't wait to get there. You know, every time both of these guys fight, it's fun. Max Holloway has one speed. He moves forward, and he breaks you down and eventually finishes you. And Frankie Edgar has the same style. Frankie Edgar does not stop. Continual movement, always throwing punches. His boxing has gotten so good over the years. You know, we all know how good his wrestling is. I expect this fight to be an absolute war and a dogfight.
All right, so in terms of Holloway, he's coming off his first loss in 6 years. What do you make of the way he responded to that loss? And what kind of a Max Holloway do you expect to see?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and I think that's going to be interesting in this fight, you know, coming off the loss that he did. I was surprised because I always call him, you know, I always say what a big featherweight he is. So I always thought he'd do really well at lightweight. Then he goes to lightweight, and he actually looked small. So there was an obvious huge size difference in that fight. And still, if you look at the way Holloway fought that fight against Poirier, he's a stud.
All right, so Dan, in terms of how fighters respond to losses, you never really know, right? Also on that card is Chris Cyborg, who's returning for the first time since she lost her belt to Amanda Nunes. How do you think that she's going to respond to that loss?
It's going to be interesting, too. Anytime you have these people that have gone on these long runs and don't know what it feels like to lose, don't know what it feels like, you know, to get beat, it's always interesting to see how they're going to respond in their next fight. And you know, she's fighting Felicia Spencer, who is undefeated, 7-0, and it's a very interesting fight.
August 3rd, meantime, you've got Colby Covington taking on Robbie Lawler in Newark. That's on ESPN. When you look at the welterweight division and all the talent there is, how critical then is this fight?
Yeah, no, it's the big deal. Especially, you know, both of these guys. Lawler feels like he shouldn't have lost that fight to Askren. The ref made a mistake in the fight. He wasn't out, you know, in that choke that he was in. So this is a chance for him to get another fight with one of the top two guys in the world to prove that he still belongs in the top five. And for Colby Covington, obviously he's had a string of bad luck with the surgery that he needed, didn't take the fight with Woodley, and now all the other things that have gone on in the division. It's a big deal. It's going to set one of these two in the top five and set them up for big fights. And behind them, I mean, you got Masvidal, Leon Edwards, who just looked great, Dos Anjos, who's an absolute beast. That division is stacked right now.
So UFC 240 is coming up 10 p.m. Eastern pay-per-view Saturday night. Then you've got UFC Fight Night on ESPN. Dana, one last thought. You and I have talked boxing and fighting for years on this show, and you know the risks that are involved. I had Kevin Ioli on this show yesterday, and initially we were going to talk about Manny Pacquiao, and then that news broke about the passing of Maxim Dadashev following injuries he sustained in a fight on Friday night. As a boxing fan, Dana, what was your reaction when you heard that news?
Yeah, no, it's always, you know, God, I can't even explain the feeling, but it reverberates throughout the entire combat sports world when something like this happens. And it's so sad to see. And I'd like to say, much respect to Buddy McGirt. I don't know if you've seen the video, but I'm actually going to post that today on social media too, with props to him and you know, begging him to stop the fight in that round. And, you could see the kid did not want to stop fighting. And it's cool to see somebody like Buddy McGirt in there, looking out for his fighter.
Buddy McGirt's a Hall of Famer. I have seen that video. Dana, I know exactly what you're talking about. Dana White, UFC president, UFC 240 coming up on Saturday night, and UFC Fight Night on ESPN. Dana, great to have you back. Always appreciate your thoughts.
Likewise, my friend. Have a good day.
You too, Dana. Have a great week. Now is the time where I've got to do something extremely hard to move away from talking about the ridiculousness of sports to talking about something incredibly sad, something incredibly difficult, something extremely hard. And there is no easy or smooth way to do this. As some of you may know, the Jungle lost one of its own yesterday when we received the news that Randall in the OC had passed away. You may have seen the tweet from his account. Quote, "It is with a heavy heart that I notify the clones, friends, and Jim Rome that Randy Randall FWFI has unexpectedly passed away. He leaves behind a wife and young daughter. Close friends only, please reach out via message and I'll reply when I can. Thank you all." End quote. This is an absolute gut punch, and I can't begin to fathom or imagine the pain and the grief for Randall's family. If you know this show, you know Randall. You know about the guy who started making a name for himself as an emailer when he would sign his name, Randall, wait for it, in the OC. And there was this period of time where everybody tried to figure out where he was in the OC. North County, South County, Orange Coast. Was he a Garden Grove man, Newport Beach? And then we got our answer. It became very clear that Randall was everywhere. And when I say that, I mean that. He was everywhere. Randall was in the studio. Randall was at a Costco. Randall was anywhere, and he was everywhere. If there was something show-related, Randall was there. Like the time in 2016, when he went to the track to see Stays in Vegas, and he knew the sport. Check this call, breaking down the history of racing. Randall, are you in the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio right now? Do I not see you?
Jimmy, how you doing? No, I'm not. How you doing? I'm in the parking lot, actually. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm great. I know you're close wherever you are, Randall. So tell me about that day. How did it go? And if you got a second, Randall, kind of explain what it is about horse racing that you might like that people just don't get and don't want to get.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. Jimmy, I actually have been doing it, my whole life. My dad took me there, probably in the mid-70s, 75. I went a lot from 75 to 85. Those 10 years, me, my dad, and my brother, and my uncle, we'd go to all the tracks in SoCal. It was basically Los Alamitos, Santa Anita, Hollywood Park, Del Mar, and we even went to, Pomona. So we'd go wherever the meet was, we would go, I fell in love with it. It was actually like the first sport that I knew, before even whatever, baseball and football. I was into horse racing, and you got to know the trainers and the jockeys. I had favorite jockeys, Bill Shoemaker, Lafitte Pink Eye was my favorite, but I like Chris McCarron, Gary Stevens, those guys. Those are the guys I grew up with. So, but Pink Eye Jr. was always my favorite. But if you know the jockeys and stuff, you will get into it. I knew the horses, was affirmed and, Spectacular Bid. I saw those horses run too. So it's really good, but it's a good day.
See, now Randall was anywhere and everywhere, and Randall emailed and tweeted, but Randall rarely called the program. That was a rare call. He also broke down the race that day.
The Periscope, it struggled at first. I was trying to get you at the paddock, but it wasn't working. I couldn't get any reception, kept saying poor connection. So I couldn't get you at the paddock. But I ended up going, right at the wire when the race started. That's when I scoped it, and it worked because I had a pretty good reception there, I guess. So I ended up scoping the whole race. All the clones were with me. All the clones were with me on Periscope. It was cool. Then pretty much I helped call the race. I mean, she ran a great race. I'm just all heart. Stays in Vegas, just phenomenal. Just battled the whole way. Perfect spot. Third at the top of the lane, and then just took down B Mine. I mean, what was she, 3-5? Took down the favorite, and then Solis just really outdueled Bays. I thought he thought he gave it a great ride.
Randall, you nailed it. Great job. Thank you for periscoping it. Thank you for representing. Always good to see you. Randall's like the stalker that I like. Randall's a good stalker. But dudes, is he here? You know, I wasn't even there for one of my favorite Randall memories at the track. I was at the O'Reilly Auto Parts manager's meeting when Shared Belief had arguably his biggest race ever. It was a showdown with his rival California Chrome in the San Antonio Stakes. You know, we always thought we had the better horse, but Chrome was the people's champ. Chrome was the horse that won the Kentucky Derby. Chrome was the horse that had a look at the Triple Crown. Chrome had a much bigger following than Shared Belief. But the day they ran against each other in the San Antonio Stakes, Randall showed up. He showed up and he stood in with everybody rocking purple for California Chrome. He represented Shared Belief. He represented Jungle Racing. He represented the Jungle. And he represented the Rome family. And speaking of the Rome family, I'll never forget Randall being at the track and shouting out to our younger son, Logan. Logan! Logan! Rat family, Logan! Tell your old man to bring it back, Logan! Logan, the Rat family! Logan was blown away by Randall. Logan actually was awed by Randall when he first met him. But getting to me in the paddock was nothing for Randall. Check out this tweet from Lef. Lef tweeted, quote, in 2015, Randall and I got locked out on the roof of the old Jim Rome studio trying to find it. Here's a tweet from Denlesks. Quote, absolutely devastating news about the passing of Randall. Had the gift of knowing Randall for several years, and he was totally genuine and one of the most loving people I have ever met. Prayers to his family as we await info on how we can assist them. I mean, I could read tweets and emails for hours about Randall, and not just about him making people laugh and bringing joy, but about the times he reached out to people to check on them, to check on their families, to follow up, to see how somebody was doing. Kyle Brandt has gone on to do his thing with the NFL Network, but he had plenty of dealings with Randall, and he had some thoughts that he wanted to share. KB, nice to have you. How are you?
Dude, it's KB. Wait for it. In New York, and I am bumming today, man, because we lost a good one.
No doubt about it. So when you think about Randall, Kyle, what comes to mind? What are your first thoughts?
So many things, so many positive things. Randall was a true clone in the most positive sense of that term. Randall was a clone dude with all the trimmings. He loved the Jim Rome show. He had a unique handle. He had his own stick. He liked the clone stuff. Randall was a big Rat Family guy. He loved sports. He loved the Broncos. But more than anything, dude, he adored being part of this Jungle community. And I know for him to be talked about like this, to be honored by you, would just make his world. Make his world.
KB, do you remember, well, obviously you do, but you had an encounter with Randall in a Costco. What happened?
So, you know, I mentioned his stick, which you've heard. It's, Randall was, the joke was he was the stalker, okay? And the stalker came from the sweetest, most positive place in that Randall liked being around the show. He wanted to be involved. He liked coming to things. And the stalker thing happened because, I'm going to say, man, in about 2014, there was what I would call a period of highly concentrated Randall encounters. We kept running into him. I think in the space of about a week, we saw him at Santa Anita, came out for a race. Then, like, the next day, I ran into him shopping, and we took a selfie, which someone just tweeted at me. It's on Twitter, same picture from years ago. And then a couple of days later, I got to make a Costco run. And I bring my son, at the time it was one, Calvin, this little toddler. You go to Costco, you're a little tense. You know it's going to be kind of a fight. We get to the front of the store. I set Calvin down. I got my elbows out. I get the cart going. And Calvin takes off. Calvin runs around the corner. I'm scared. I'm frantic. I'm tearing after my kid. And before I round the corner, I hear this voice say, Calvin! And I'm thinking, who's calling out my kid? I go, do I have to fight somebody right now? I come around the corner, and there, crouched down to Calvin's level, is a smiling dude with sunglasses and in a Rod Smith jersey, giving Calvin a high five. And it's Randall. I just saw him 2 days ago, and Randall sprouts up. Calvin's growing like a weed. He looks great. And then he wants to get in his Broncos tapes and everything. And I have never been so relieved to see someone in my life that I was right there in the Costco parking lot of Randall. And he was the best. And then it took off. We tell that story on the air, and next thing you know, it's, understand, anybody who's not familiar with this, no one loved the Randall Stalker shtick more than Randall. He was a very self-aware, self-deprecating guy who would email in his own jokes. And Jim, if you would come back from the weekend and say, well, I cooked out behind the backyard over the weekend, Randall would immediately email in, yeah, you know, dude, from my perspective behind the garage, I thought the chicken was a little overcooked, but I was using binoculars at the time. He loved that shtick. And when I left 3 years ago, almost to the day 3 years ago, a bunch of the clones made this video as I left, and it was left on the going on, like in Hollywood, and they're sitting there at a bar stool or at the kitchen table or on their couch, shot for shot for shot. And you get to Randall's shot, and he's in the bushes, surrounded by leaves and branches, and he's whispering, KB, I got to be quiet. I'm in Romy's backyard right now. Just want to wish you the best. I got to go. And then he pulls up the binoculars. He loved it, man. And whenever we would see him, he would tell us how much he loved it. And that's part of the reason Randall was so lovable. He was just a good, fun, goofy, sweet guy.
He was, KB. And I know that hit you pretty hard. And I really appreciate you that upon finding out that news, you wanted to call up and share your thoughts on that. And I know that would mean the world to him too, KB. Thanks so much for doing it.
Anytime, anytime. Thank you, dude. And thank you, Randall, wherever you are.
Let's go to the phones. We go to Huntington Beach. Rich Flores is on the line. Rich, good morning. How are you?
Not my favorite day. I have a prepared statement from his wife. I want to say just a couple things. I met Randall the first time at the Big Wings party, Mark in Hollywood. I think my favorite memory from that was when I got a phone call about 10 o'clock at night and asking where Randall had parked his car. It was pretty funny. You know, Leff and I aren't doing very well with this. He was in our closest circle, one of our best friends. Got to hang out with Randall at, you know, the Chargers mini camps in Costa Mesa, or Broncos games in Carson. I was with Randall when I met Janet, your wife, the first time over at the Improv for the Disabled Veterans. He was in the helicopter with us when we buzzed the tower. He was the guy that was up in, when he went out to Santa Anita that time you weren't there, he was actually the guy who found Terrence and Sierra Madre. He was up at the Buccaneer and asked the bartender and said, hey, do you know Terrence and Sierra Madre? And that's how we found Terrence. I got to go with Randall up to Ron Say's house. Last time I saw Randall was at Hennessy's. I put him in the Uber on the way home, and just nothing but great times with that guy. I want to read this. I'm getting a call right now from Trapper. He's devastated as well. This is from his wife, Crystal. It says, we cannot comprehend the catastrophic event that has taken away the most needed, loved, fiercely dedicated father, husband, and friend. Randall, simply put, my Randy, was a legend. And he was certainly a legend to his 7-year-old daughter, Bella. In this time of immense grief, the best way to find happiness is to remember. I'm going to share a clone story some of you early clones may know, but a lot of you will hear for the first time. I mentioned before Randy was fiercely dedicated. That was the person he was, and it branched out to every aspect of his life, including being a clone and being a part of the jungle. You all knew him as the stalker. We knew him as Jim Rome's biggest fan. If Rome had a horsing race, he was there betting on him and telling all of his friends to do the same. If Rome made an appearance anywhere, Randy did what he could do just to say hi to him. On our first wedding anniversary, I was 3 months pregnant, and we decided a nice drive up the coast to San Francisco, making a few stops along the way, would be great. Halfway along, he pulls over and tells me something. He says, Jim Rome is speaking at his alma mater, UCSB, and I emailed the show saying we are in an area on our 1-year anniversary trip. And there's no way my wife's going to want to do this, but if you read this email on air, Jim, she'll do it. Randy proceeds to turn the radio on and tune into the show, and not 5 minutes later, I hear Jim Rome reading the email on air. You know, that look of sheer genuine happiness a kid gets, it was all over his face. Needless to say, we sat front and center in that lecture hall until the very end. Our evening continued by waiting near the limo to catch a glimpse of Rome as he was leaving. Randall's voice carries, and he was able to get a shout-out to Rome when he saw him. That persistence led to his very first picture with Rome. From that moment forward, Randall's desire to be a bigger part of the jungle was on like Donkey Kong. Randall loved Rome and everything about the show, especially the clones. He was one of the best. We thank you all for being a part of his life that brought him so much happiness. Rackham, Romy, love always, Jungle, Crystal. That's all I really got, Jim. There'll be a GoFundMe that's going to be put together for Crystal and Bella. And so love that guy.
Let's go Little Rock, Arkansas, Nooch. Hi, Nooch. How are you?
Hey, Jimmy. Thanks for taking my call, bud. I was actually doing pretty good holding it together until Rich Flores, and that was a beautiful phone call, and thank you, Rich, and thank you for reaching out to Crystal. Just real quick, man, I know you got other stuff to do, so quick story with Randall. I was fortunate enough to know Randall for the last few years. My very first trip out to SoCal was about 4 years ago, and nobody on the JTP really knew who I was yet, but Randall dove into my DMs and had us meet him at this wonderful little spot in Laguna Beach, and he bought us lunch. I'm talking, we were like 33 hours road haggard. We looked like trash. Randall showed up with that giant smile and those epic shades and proceeded to show us an amazing time in Laguna, even though we looked like we were hitchhikers. He is an unforgettable soul. I'm fortunate and blessed to say that I knew him. I personally will be chugging some Jack and Coke every Broncos game this season and probably next season. And before I get out, Jim, I got one more thing. I would like to politely ask if little Alvy could add our epic and beloved yeah to the deck of yeah. War Randall, War the Broncos. I'm out.
Let's go to Fall City. Liz. Hi, Liz. How are you?
Hey, Jim. It's a hard day. You said earlier that Randall was everywhere. In here, there are beasts, there are fights, there are times when we get burned out and we rebel, and times when we laugh and cry. It's impossible to explain this jungle family to outsiders, and we, as a jungle family and a clone family, lost the biggest light in the jungle yesterday. Randall was the epitome of joy, of being bigger than life, of being gracious, loyal, and mostly full of love. He was joy and happiness and loved every single clone unconditionally. And I've never known a clone more loved than him. Light is everywhere, even in the darkest places. If you look for the light, you will find it. And Randall, he was that light. He was at Del Mar, in your studio, at Big Wings, and every smack-off call of left. He made you want to be a better person, and he will live forever in our hearts. He was the best, the king, a truly special and beautiful person, and we will all miss him tremendously. I love you, Randall. And Alvy, can you hit us with another yeah and put it in the deck of yeah forever? Thanks, Jim.
Yeah! Let's go to Huntington Beach. Silk. Hey, brah.
Bruh, this is a tough day, man. Randall's such a great dude. You know, we were AFC West guys. You know, we were a Charger fan and he a Bronco fan. And my wife and I had plans to hook up with him this season for a couple games. And, you know, the Jungle family is tight. And I travel in circles with lots of friends. Not all of them are daily listeners or really know what goes on the Rome show. And there were times when I was with a group of all my bros and females too, a bunch of all of our friends, and when Randall would show up and everyone's like, dude, that guy is awesome, what's his deal? And I'm like, it's just Randall, bro. He's like the coolest dude. This is going to be a tough football season, not being able to see Randall, scoping before the game, scoping at halftime. Nothing better than seeing Randall with his head in his trunk hiding from parking lot security drinking a Jack and Coke, bro. I know you're up against it. I'm not a religious guy, bro, but my thoughts are definitely with his family, and hopefully we'll have information on some sort of service for him. All right, later, bro.
Thanks, Silk, very much. Mark in Hollywood. Hey, Mark.
Hey, bro. Yeah, it's a really tough day. I just like to share a little anecdote. You know, when I first met Randall, it was at the old school Big Wang's smack off party. And I know like a lot of clones did smack off parties and different listen parties before, but to my knowledge, it was like kind of one of the first things for the smack off. And it was weird, man. Like, first of all, when I rolled up in Big Wang's, everyone was really quiet. You know, it wasn't a lot of talk. It was kind of the first thing that, you know, people have ever done. And it's early in the morning, and I see this dude in the corner, and he's just talking loud, like he's the only one that we can hear. And I go to my boy Rich and Greg in Sun Valley. I'm like, who the hell is that guy? And it's like, that's Randall. I'm like, who's Randall? He's like, wait for it. I'm like, if that's Randall, are you kidding me? And you know, it's funny because when you meet people and they're funny emails, you think everyone's like a kid in a way. But you never expect people to look as old as they are or just look like they are. And he's this grown-ass man, and he goes, Mark in Hollywood, what's up? I've been here since 8:30. I tried to get Big Wang's to open the bar early. They thought I was nuts. And he just rattles it off and off and off. And that whole day was dope. You know, we all went out to the bar afterwards. We got lit. And ever since then, you know, when we did Del Mar, he was the same way. He was just such a good dude. And everyone's right. He emails, he texts, he always has good call. He is just a beacon of, like, positivity in what some people on the outside may perceive as a negative or snarky or sarcastic fan base. 12 Wood is right. It's not like that at all. And Randall is the personification of the positivity that the jungle brings. So I just wanted to share my little anecdote. I'm broken up like everyone else, but Randall, RIP to you, your family, and I'm out.
Glad you did, Mark. Thanks so much. It's Mark in Hollywood. Matt in L.A., I had to cut off, but I bring him back right now. Sorry about that, Matt. Good to have you back.
Romy, from the O.C. to the pearly gates of paradise, I want to thank you, Randall, because he was, like you say, Romy, I mean, you've put together a community, and there's some real jewels in this community, man. Randall was at the top of the list. I mean, I got to meet this guy for 2 hours of my life, and I feel blessed for it. Like you say, he was just a connector of people. I mean, Silk Bra and this guy were like two of a kind. I mean, these guys were so, are so genuine in Silk's case, and Randall, rest in peace. But I mean, what I've noticed is, like, from the whole clone nation, and this is a tribute to you, Jim Rome, of the jungle, I mean, everybody shows a genuine love, man. We might smack each other on the radio waves or on Twitter, but when we get together, man, it, you know, the few times that I've been together with clones and met up with them, they're real fools, real people. I say fools because I'm from the street. Real people, man, that are real men, real women, that are just genuine people that got nothing but love for the jungle, for you, and for everybody they encounter. And that's all I wanted to say, Jim. Rack Randall, man. Deca, yeah. Yeah!
Let's go to Lake Elsinore quickly. John in Lake Elsinore. Hi, John. How are you?
How you doing, Jim?
Good, good. John, how are you?
Doing okay. Hanging in there. Trying to do the best with this whole situation.
John, you told Adam, you're Randall's brother. Is that true?
That's correct.
Okay. I'm very sorry for your loss, John. I don't know if you've been listening today, but you could tell how much your brother meant to the entire jungle community, the jungle family. I hope you've heard some of this, if at all possible. There is so much love for Randall.
Yes, I recorded the whole show, Jim. I mean, it's just overwhelmed with the calls and the love for him. And it was very hard. I mean, I cried so much today. It was very hard listening to it all, but it was great to listen to it all. And I know my brother's smiling down. I mean, he was like, you guys all loved him, and he loved you guys back. And he has so many friends. He has so many, you know, everybody can see that when he at the get-togethers. You know, I've been actually, I've gone to like a couple of them, but he's gone to so many of them. Was it Big Wags, I think, was one of them that I went to with him once. And just you guys know his personality and the way he is. He lives for today, and he lived it up. And he had a big heart, though. There's another part that people don't know about my brother, though. I mean, some people, a lot of you, they mention his daughter and his wife Crystal, but he had a big heart for his daughter. I mean, that's what breaks my heart the most. And you know, she's 7 years old, and you know, it's going to be hard. But you know, as a family, we'll get through this. And we just lost our father a couple of months ago too. I don't know if Adam brought that up, but it's been a tough year for the Majuli family, Randolph. So, but we're going to get through this. But I just want to say thank you to you, Jim, for what you've done for him today on the show. And it was beautiful hearing everything and what everybody contributed.
So thank you very much. I'm really sorry for your loss, John, and Crystal, and Bella.
Good night now!